As usual, the castaway is introduced by Roy Plumley.
This week, our castaway is an angler. In fact, the best-known freshwater angler in the country, an authority on angling, Richard Walker. Now, Dick, one thinks of an angler as a contemplative, solitary figure. Does that mean to say that you'd be good castaway material? You could take the loneliness for an extended time?
I'm sure I could.
Are you a musical person?
I'm not a competent performer on a musical instrument, but I love music, and most of my family have been musical in both senses, so yes. I enjoy music very much. I should greatly miss music if I couldn't take these records.
What purpose do you want these records to fulfill on your island? Do you want them to bring back the past, give you great performances? What?
Firstly, for pure enjoyment of being able to sit down, if one had time, on a desert island and listen to this kind of music. But there are other aspects of it too. Some of it would be nostalgia, and some would be a link with a past that one would hope at some time to resume when one escaped.
Mm-hmm. What's the first one you've chosen?
It's the Druids' Chorus from Bellini's Norma. I think it's very, very lovely, and it's a solemn piece. It's the sort of thing one would want to sustain one's spirit, because these were men who were fighting against an oppressor in the opera, and I would like to hear that piece very much at times.
Bellini's Norma, the Covent Garden Opera House male chorus, the soloist Nicola Rossi Limeni. Now, what's your second disc?
Well, this would be pure nostalgia, again linked with the hope of escape. I want to hear Sir Bernard Miles doing his Old Charlie bit, especially the one about the old schoolmistress. I reckon that's a smashing bit of Buckinghamshire.
Yeah, he and you come from about the same corner of England.
Yes, indeed.
But I had a tidy good education. I could read when I was 18. Only, of course, not to understand it. Not like that old Miss Piggott what used to play the organ. I hated the sights of her. I couldn't abide her. But she was very hot on the temperance. Ah, I mind she seed my barra stood outside the Rose and Crown one time. So I sees her on the Tuesday, and she starts off at me. She says, I seed your barra stood outside the Rose and Crown, she says. That's intemperance, she says. Look not upon the wine when it is red, she says, because at the last it biteth like a serpent and stingeth like a adder. Proverbs 25, 31 and 32. But I said, I was never inside the Rose and Crown. I said, I never come near. And she says, I see your barra stood outside. She says, that's intemperance, that's intemperance. So I seed it wasn't no good arguing. I touched me hat and I said, good afternoon. About 3 or 4 days afterwards, I left my barra stood outside her front door all night. That had her.
Bernard Miles, over the gate. Richard, were you a town boy or a country boy? Were you born right in the country?
I wasn't born in the country. I was born in a market town, which was the centre at that time of an agricultural industry surrounding it. It was a farming town, Hitchin, in North Hertfordshire.
Ah, yes. When did you start fishing? How old were you?
I was about 4.
Who started you?
My paternal grandfather was a very keen angler. He was an Oxfordshire man who'd moved into Hertfordshire. He also was involved in the printing industry, which may have had some influence on my subsequent journalism.
Yes.
He used to take me fishing when I was very tiny, My other grandfather was not an angler, but he was not only a farmer, but a countryman who knew the name of every bird and every plant and every fish and every insect that he saw about his farm.
Mm-hmm.
And he always made me learn these things. If a sparrowhawk flew over, he would say, "Now then, what's the name of that bird, boy?" And if I didn't know it, it would be drummed into me till I did.
Yes. When you weren't fishing and birdwatching, what were you doing? What did you want to be?
Oh, I wanted to be something to do with growing things in the broadest sense. If I'd been able to choose my career exactly, I would have been a farmer, but I should have wanted very much to be a mechanized farmer, and I think farming can be mechanized without destroying its soul. As it is, I turn out to be the designer of horticultural machinery, mainly for mowing sports turf, which is not really very much different, and it's a career that I've been very happy in.
Yes. You were in Cambridge. What did you read there?
Engineering.
And during the war, you were a boffin?
I was involved in the design of night fighter radar, mainly.
When the war was over, back to horticultural machinery?
Indeed.
And fishing, of course, all the time. You write about fishing a great deal. You've written many books.
I enjoyed writing because you meet awfully nice people in fishing. There are fewer unpleasant people per thousand in angling than in any other sport or indeed field of human endeavour that I know, possibly because it stops people from being grisly and unpleasant if they've got a thing to do that they enjoy.
And you've written a column about fishing for how many years?
Oh, I started this column at the invitation of the people who began publishing Angling Times in July 1953, and I've done this column once a week without a... I'm very proud of this. I don't mind boasting about this a bit, because it's taken a lot of doing. I've written this column now for nearly 21 years, every week without a break, and it isn't writing the column that's the hard chore. It's answering the 70 or so letters I get from readers every week, and I do answer every single one of them.
Yes. There are, obviously, a lot of anglers.
3 million.
That's your estimate?
No, that's a very accurate sampling by one of these people that tell you how many there are of it.
Right,
the posters, I think they're called.
Let's have record number 3. What's that?
Record number 3 is from an opera called Sadko by Rimsky-Korsakov. I think most people know it as Song of India. And I love this Song of India because it's exotic and rich and perhaps some people would say even treacly, but I like it anyway and I want to take it to the desert island with me.
Hindu song from Sadko, sung by Dusan Georgic. Nowadays, one needs a license to fish, is that right?
In most areas, you need a license from what has now become the Regional Water Authority.
Who gets the money?
The Regional Water Authority. It's spent on the Fisheries Department.
Yes. Now, broadly speaking, there are two kinds of freshwater fishing, coarse fishing and game fishing. Game fishing is what? Only salmon and trout?
I don't care too much for this purely artificial division. I suppose one could say that the what are known in this country as game fish, that's to say trout, sea trout and salmon, are the ones that are nicest to eat. And the fisheries are run on the basis that the fish are going to be killed and eaten if they're caught. The coarse fisheries, on the other hand, are run on the basis that an angler will put back alive the fish he catches. So that the cost of maintenance of a coarse fishery is lower because it doesn't require the restocking that a trout water does,
yes,
or the expensive policing by bailiffs and so forth that a salmon or sea trout water needs.
So all roach and dace and carp and so forth are caught and then put back again?
Indeed, yes.
Now, it's a very technical business nowadays, fishing. I've been looking through some fishing books. There are pages of different kinds of hooks, for example, all looking to me exactly the same.
I don't use a great variety of hooks. It becomes increasingly difficult to get good quality hooks. The hooks you buy now are far inferior to those you could buy 100 years ago. No one would grizzle if hooks cost 5p instead of 1p.
Hmm.
But the makers think they ought to cost 1p, and they can't make a very good hook for 1p.
And flies, there are hundreds of those illustrated in the books. Everyone apparently has his own idea on what sort of fly attracts the gullible fish. How many fishermen make their own flies?
Possibly 5%. It's growing there very fast. It's growing fast because the tackle trade can no longer rely on home industry making flies at so much per gross. And this is not a thing you can mechanize. So many people are taking to tying their own flies to save the cost, and in doing so finding that it's an absorbing hobby in its own right.
Yes.
It's a knack. It's like a lot of other things. It looks hard if you don't know how to do it, but once you've learned it, it seems so simple, and you wonder why other people can't do it as easily as you can. My hands are not exactly tiny, but I managed to tie flies an eighth of an inch long.
Let's have record number four.
I think it would be important on a desert island to have a satisfied mind, and I love the sentiment in the song of that name, which Joan Baez sings so well. Not in the sense of being satisfied with one's lot, but satisfied with one's progress in one's endeavours to escape. So I'd like to play a satisfied mind from time to time.
No money can't buy that. Your youth when you're old. A friend when you're lonely. Or love that's grown cold. And the world's richest man is a pauper at times.
Joan Baez, A Satisfied Mind. Now, the course fishing season is a different time of the year from game fishing, isn't it?
In Yorkshire, it starts on June the 1st, everywhere else on June the 16th. Game fishing starts at all sorts of different times in different places. It may start as early as February the 1st in some areas and as late as May the 1st in others.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know what the season is for the area or the water where you're fishing if you're going after trout or sea trout or salmon.
Yes. Now, you've made rather a corner in carp. You've caught the biggest carp on record. That was quite a few years ago, wasn't it?
That was in 1952.
And how big was it?
44 pounds.
That sounds gigantic.
It is. It's the biggest freshwater fish that's ever been caught in Britain.
Really? Where did you catch it?
I caught it at a lake about 4 miles west of Ross-on-Wye in Herefordshire.
Did you know it was there?
Yes. This is rather amusing because we'd seen these fish there, and there was more than one of that size. And I had written in the Angling Press at the time that I was convinced that there were carp of more than 40 pounds. Now, at that time, the record was 31 and a quarter, and that was reckoned to be about as big as they'd ever come. So that, as the Angling Press always has a very active and sometimes acrimonious correspondence column, a number of readers had written in to say, this is straining, and I quote one of them, straining our credulity beyond reason. And I was so happy when a sample of these letters was published on the left-hand centre page of this journal with the account of my having caught a 44-pounder with a large photograph of it on the opposite page.
And what happened to this magnificent fish? Did you have it stuffed?
It lived until, last year. I think it died last year.
Let's have some more music.
Charles Craig singing from Puccini's La Boheme, Your Tiny Hand is Frozen.
Craig. Dick, we haven't thought about competition fishing when you get hundreds of people at regular 10-yard intervals along a river bank. What are the rewards? Are there big prizes on these occasions?
The real top men can earn several thousand pounds tax-free in a year.
Really?
From their prowess at match fishing. And do.
It's a special kind of skill, is it? Have you ever done any?
Yes, indeed. I did one season match fishing because I wanted to know what it's all about. And if you're going to write about fishing, you've got to go and do it. This is the one sport where the public won't tolerate an armchair writer.
Mm.
In every other sport, a man who's never kicked a football in his life can tell the England manager whom he should pick.
Did you win any prizes?
Oh, yes. I won 13 out of 16 matches in which I fished.
Well, that does show that skill counts, doesn't it?
I should add that these were not top-flight fishing matches that I fished in. I should not have done so well if they'd been national-level matches. They were fairly small-club matches with up to about 100 people competing.
Well, that's very modest of you. Let's have some more music. What's number six?
Oh, I would like Marlene Dietrich singing Sagt mir, wo die Blumen sind, Where Have All the Flowers Gone. I love it.
Sag mir, wo die Blumen sind, wo sind sie geblieben? Sag mir, wo die Blumen sind, was ist geschehen? Sag mir, wo die Blumen sind, Mädchen pflückten sie geschwind. Wann wird man je verstehen? Wann wird man je?
Marlene Dietrich. Now, obviously, you're not going to starve on this desert island. You'd be able to catch fish. What about contributing to your other creature comforts? Could you put up a hut?
Oh, yes, no problem.
Can you cultivate?
Yes, indeed, I can.
Could you make a small craft? Would you try to escape?
I'd escape. I promise you.
Any idea how?
Well, presumably, I'd have to make a boat. Presuming that there were flints or some other very hard stone on the island, I can make a stone tool, a variety of stone tools. I'm not just saying I'd try to escape. I would escape.
Splendid.
I've got too many things that I want to come back for ever to waver in that resolve.
Right, let's have record number seven.
I'm not a very religious man, but I like the Holy City. And perhaps we could have Frederick Harvey singing it.
Last night I lay a-sleeping, there came a dream so fair. I stood in old Jerusalem beside the temple there. I heard the children singing, and ever as they sang, methought the voice of angels from heaven in answer rang.
Frederick Harvey. Now we come to your last record. What's that?
My last record is Nessun Dorma from Puccini's Turandot. I want it for very personal reasons, which I shall not discuss in this program.
Nessun Dorma, sung by Flaviano Labo. If you could take just one disc of your eight, which would it be?
That one.
That one. And one luxury to take to the island with you.
I would like Benvenuto Cellini's Golden Salt Cellar.
Where is it?
I don't know. I ought to, but I don't.
We'll try and find it.
I have never seen it. I've seen a great many pictures in monochrome and colour of it, and I think it's an expression of civilised craftsmanship that's never been surpassed by anyone.
And one book, apart from the Bible and Shakespeare and big encyclopedias?
I'd like Kipling's Puck of Pook's Hill, which is a children's book, and perhaps many people would think it trivial. It's got some nice poetry in it, and it's all about England, the England that I know and love. And I would like to be able to dip into it from time to time to be reminded of all that makes England. She is not any common earth, water or wood or air, but Merlin's Isle of Gramarye, where you and I will fare. And I will fare there too. Never mind your desert island, I'll get off it.
Rudyard Kipling's Puck of Pook's Hill. And thank you, Richard Walker, for letting us hear your desert island discs.
I've enjoyed it.
Goodbye, everyone.